on 72 UA.
I love it.
With John Kerr.
We talk a lot in the program about cruising, because this is the time of the year that people think about going cruising during the Australian summer or into the Australian winter, which I guess will come up before we know where we are. Cruising is a multi-billion dollar industry in the world today, but you hear a lot of stories, of course, about the big ships, the Queen Mary too, which is coming into Australia on February the 20th, and she'll be here with her sister, the Queen Elizabeth. Well, these are big ships, and then, of course, you've got ships that carry 3,500 passengers. Where is it all going to stop? Then, of course, there are the small boutique cruise lines, ships that sometimes might carry 100, 200, 300, 400 passengers. Is that really the way to go? What is the difference between going on a ship that carries 1, 2, 3, 400 passengers as opposed to travelling on a cruise ship that carries well over 3,000? Well, we might find out from Roderick Imey, who is a member of the Australian Society of Travel Writers. And Roderick specialises in small boutique cruise lines. He's been on a lot of them. Good morning.
John, good morning. Thanks for the invitation.
Oh, it's very nice to see you in the studio rather than across the table at an ASTW lunch, Rod. You do, and you have done, in fact, quite a lot of small boutique cruising, haven't you?
Indeed I have, John. Yeah, in fact, I find it's become a bit of a personal passion. And the more I do, the more I like doing more of them. And I think, as you yourself have experienced the big ships, and you quite rightly point out that the cruise market in general is exploding, new ships being built all the time. At the small end of the market, it's likewise experiencing a very, very healthy growth spurt. People are interested in not just cruising in general and being on the water, but they're interested in getting to places which you can't get to with planes and trains and automobiles. So it's up to some of these small expedition adventure ships and adventure cruise companies to seek out these new destinations and take people to places they've only ever imagined or read about in the back pages of National Geographic.
Okay, well, you've done quite a few. Let's run through some of them and find out how you found them,
sure,
what it was that you saw, and how you would compare your experiences to those people on the big ships. The Oceanic Discoverer took you, Rod, to PNG.
Now, that's been my most recent experience, and it's been one that will stay with me forever, I'm sure. The Oceanic Discoverer, people may remember it as Oceanic Princess. It's had a name change recently, and more in line with its true purpose. We started off in Ulaetau, on the very eastern tip of Papua New Guinea, up through the Solomon Sea, stopping at some very remote little islands and communities, up to Rabaul, which people will know is being very busy lately with the volcano. And it's quite exciting to be in port with a volcano literally erupting every 15 or 20 minutes and showering the place with plumes of brown and black smoke. It's a bit messy because you have to dust yourself off quite a bit. From Rabaul, we headed out towards through the Bismarck Archipelago over towards the Sepik River, which some people probably would have done. I imagine one or two of your listeners at least would have done that. It's been a popular adventure destination in Papua New Guinea now for a good couple of decades. And we went 90 nautical miles up, visiting some of the small little villages where you'll get some of these bizarre handicrafts and you'll meet some of the more esoteric people who live up on that river. And then out we went through Madang, back around to Moresby, and then we headed east all the way through the remote archipelagos, the Louisiades, the D'Entrecasteaux group, all the way out to Solomon Islands.
Wow.
And of course there's lots of military history as well as the cultural stuff that you'll see out there, down through through that group all the way down, and if you finished up in Noumea, which I'm sure lots of your listeners have.
So how long was that cruise?
That was two itineraries back to back. It was a 10-night itinerary and a 14-night itinerary. One is called The Land That Time Forgot, and the other one is called The Melanesian Odyssey. So that's
and this is aboard the Oceanic Discoverer.
Yeah.
And what's the, I mean, how many passengers?
That ship is only geared to take 76 passengers. It's got 36 twin cabins, some doubles, some twin, of course. It's like, but they're big cabins. They're like motel rooms. They've all got private facilities. Everybody eats together in the same dining room. It's all the quality of food is superior restaurant standard. Some of them like to get excited and say they're fine dining. I wouldn't go so far, but they're certainly enjoyable, superior restaurant standard. And our food was you know, really beyond any criticism.
And where does the Oceanic Discover a sail out of, generally?
It's based, the company Coral Princess Cruises is based in Cairns. It works very hard all year round. It spends a lot of its time in the Kimberley, and John, your listeners will know that the Kimberley is a very popular place for adventure cruising, perhaps the premier destination for adventure cruising in Australia, and with numerous operators working there, small ships, large ships, Orion, True North, Kimberley Quest, just to name a few.
Yeah, beautiful. Now, I mean, with the trip that you, or the two back-to-back trips that you've just described to us, Rod, I mean, obviously, as you do on normal cruise lines, and this is a normal cruise line, of course, you have your daily excursions, just as you do on the bigger ships?
Yes, you do. Now, this is one of the things that the smaller cruise ships do so very much better than the large ships, because you don't have to unload 1,000, 2,000 people at any one port. It becomes a bit of a crush, doesn't it, when you're trying to get on shore. So we've got a couple of dozen people, 30, 40, 50 people, 100 people, bunched up into groups of 20 or 30. We get into the Zodiacs. Your listeners will know that they're the rigid inflatable boats that whiz ashore. The thing with the Oceanic Discoverer was it has an 80-seat tender which loads off the back of the boat, a bit like a lifeboat, so everyone can get on the boat and off again without having to try and jump between a boat that's pitching around in a sea. So that people are very fond of that method of embarkation and disembarkation. So go ashore. The shore excursions are pre-organized. We'll meet the chief or the principal of a village or a school. We'll tour a village. There'll be some cultural activities. It could be carving, it could be cooking, it could be singing, it could be dancing. And even though you might be doing one or two of these a day for a week, each of them is different, and they're slightly different, and different cultures and different people, and they've all got little tiny little subtleties.
Yeah, listen, we'd have to speed it up a bit. I'm fascinated in this subject. You see, I wonder how many of our listeners listening this morning are aware of the availability of, you know, such vehicles as the Oceanic Discoverer and those two back-to-backers that you've just described to us. I know you were on the MV Discoverer in Tasmania. That's something I'd like to do, cruise around Tasmania. I think it's one of the best places in Australia. But let's get a little further afield with you. You have toured Alaska, the Galapagos, Cambodia, and the Amazon on small cruise vessels.
Some of these are not all overnight vessels, so I'll stick to the overnight vessels. In the Arctic, which was Alaska and Siberia, I was on a very famous icebreaker called the Kapitan Klebnikov. It operates extensively in the Arctic and Antarctic waters. Last year became the record breaker. It actually equaled the record for furthest south by any vessel, which was held by Roald Amundsen when he went down to do the South Pole thing nearly 100 years ago. So it's a history-making vessel, so you can really get to some very, very exciting places. And, can you imagine the towering icebergs on both sides of the vessel? And then you get on helicopters, Russian jet helicopters, and you can fly inland to places like the Dry Valleys, which are almost unobtainable any other way. So once upon a time, the Shackletons, the Mawsons, and the Amundsens, that was their domain. And now, in the 21st century, we can follow them and we can live and breathe a little bit of that sense of adventure that they experienced almost, 100, 150 years ago. It's really quite a wonderful
experience. Take your long johns with you, however.
It does get a bit chilly.
Yes. What was it like being in the Amazon?
The Amazon is this enormous region. John, I'm sure your listeners are aware that if anyone's seen an atlas, almost the whole top half of South America is what's known as Amazonia, the basin which feeds the Amazon River, and it's got all kinds of smaller tributaries. The Rio Negro is one. So what the idea of that is, you'll cruise on a small vessel. Again, there's a whole range of things, ranging from a couple of dozen passengers through to several hundred passengers, because it's a big river and can take big ships. And you can stop off at some of the eco-lodges, and you can go hiking in the jungle, and you'll be looking for monkeys and big snakes and some of the famous Amazon Indian tribes who still have their little villages on the river.
You plan to go to the Russian Far East next year and Cape York with Captain Cook Cruises, the Russian Far East.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, I'm going to Cape York with Captain Cook, and that's about where, as far as they're going at the moment. There's another company called Heritage Expeditions operating out of New Zealand, who are very ambitious little company, and they've got a ship ship that just takes barely 50 or 60 passengers called the Spirit of Enderby, and they do a lot of Antarctic stuff, but they're looking in the Antarctic winter to go north, and they're looking at the Kamchatka Peninsula just north of Japan, which has got some wonderful ecosystems and natural beauty, but very, very seldom visited. I think maybe 3,000 visitors a year.
Mm. I mean, who will ever want to go to New Mia, Port Vila or Fiji ever again? But of course, thousands will.
And they will always go there.
And they always will, and all will should too, because, I mean, they're fabulous cruises. But from what you're telling us, really, smaller is beautiful to go on the... And I didn't know there was such a vast array of small cruise lines that go to these wonderful places that a lot of us have not even heard of, but obviously there is.
Well, I think, and John, you know, we haven't got time to go through every single one in detail, but if you pop down to the newsstand and grab maybe a copy of, for example, Cruise Passenger magazine, there's always a summary of the available small ship cruises and the big ship cruises, of course, in that magazine. So that information is available, and of course we've got the internet too.
Indeed. Or, of course, you can speak to a reputable travel agent anywhere in Australia where you're listening to us, and they should, if they're worth their salt, be able to put you in the direction of any of the ships that Rod has talked about here this morning.
Indeed.
Thank you, Roderick.
My pleasure, John.
Nice to have you in the studio.